there's a website that tells you the region code, and a lot of them are region free. Like Miami Vice, it hasn't got a region. If it doesn't have a region, then it's gold.
So people want to buy that?
Oh, you dick.
Hi and welcome back to Meat for the Beast. Firstly, sorry it's been a bit of a gap. We've had a bit of a period of everybody being ill, and also we've had a couple of deadlines kind of clashing with the days we were going to podcast. So we've had the three or four kind of proposed dates fall through, which has been a bit of a ball ache. But and I'm ill at the minute. I've got this ear problem at the minute. It was pissing me off. So I thought, just so we've got something to put out. It's been about a year since we recorded the first episode, so I'm going to do this as a kind of best of year one episode and get some of the highlights of the last year. Just the bits I like the most and that people have told me they liked. And we're going to get some of the guests. We'll get the guests on here, like Andy Dean, mate of mine, who does the website UK Horror Scene. Also, our mate Hal Walker, who does lots of video game columns, that kind of stuff, and was on the Bat specials. And I'll get I'll throw a bit of Melissa on as well, for the hell of it, the Yoko Ono of Meat for the Beast. So without further ado, here's some snippets from the last year. Thanks for listening to us, and we'll be back very soon. We'll do a proper year one episode, but this will tide us over for now. So here we go.
The Beast.
This is more recent. This is Dark Knight Rises.
Okay.
And in the 4 years between Dark Knight and Rises, there was talk, oh, it's going to be the last one, he's going to kill Batman. Mm-hmm. And when it came to the end, I was watching the film, and I don't think I was hungover, so I wasn't particularly sensitive, but I was watching it, and when it comes to that closing montage, and I thought, oh my god, he's actually going to do it. He's actually going to kill Batman. And technically he does. And regardless of, it's been ripped apart, the ending, ever since the film came out. But at the time, I found myself overcome with a weird grief. And I wasn't just like tearing up at the eyes. I was actually sobbing, like proper kind of thing.
Sound like Michael Caine in the film.
Exactly, yeah. But that's the thing, every Michael Caine scene in that film, I always end up on the verge of tears anyway. So when it comes to the end, it's just, I found it heartbreaking. And then at the end, the fact that he wasn't actually dead, I don't know why, I just found myself incredibly overcome. And I thought, when it ended, I thought, nice one, we've got 10 minutes of credits here, I can sit in the dark and compose myself.
Yeah.
The bastards at Cineworld were like, put the lights on, get out. So I had to put my sunglasses on indoors to hide my shame, the tears streaming down my face. But terrible.
So do you think the final scene, I was a bit confused about, well, in a good way, whether, I mean, we're ruining the film for anyone that's not seen it. So if you're not,
to be fair,
it,
the statute of limitations has passed on that. If you've not seen it, what are you doing?
Yeah, if you're not seen,
we're going to spoil it.
Go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
But when Alfred, he goes to, he's had some dream, unrealised dream, to go to Italy and fucking have a glass of wine and see Bruce Wayne with a family or whatever.
Yeah.
Have eating cheese and patronising a waiter. And he realizes that dream at the end. Do you think that I was thinking, is that just in Alfred's head? Is that what Alfred wants to see, or does that actually happen?
Well, that's the weird thing, because obviously Bruce Wayne is one of the most recognizable men on the planet, I guess, in this universe. So
yeah,
it's not like he's particularly well hidden at a crowded touristy restaurant. So I suppose there's that, but also, doesn't Alfred tell Bruce that he liked that to happen? So yeah, Bruce already knew that Alfred goes to this holiday place every year, and essentially might be reaching out to him. But to what point? I don't know. Because he's already allowed him to grieve and, you know, pretend that he's dead, and then just to have a wink across a crowded cafe sounds a bit cold.
But it implies that if Alfred did actually really see Bruce Wayne, it wasn't just Alfred's happy imagination at the end, that Bruce Wayne would have pretty much been stalking Alfred to make that moment happen.
Yeah,
hiding behind a corner and peeping at an old man, watching an old man in his misery.
Yeah,
which is a bit fucking grim.
That's twisted.
So another something that made me cry, the start of the 1979 Superman, where Superman's just hit, what the fuck are you? Superman's just hit the ground as a kid, and he's got out, and you see his cock, which you wouldn't see anymore.
Oh god, you do, don't you?
Yeah, little boy's cock. Which you wouldn't see apart from on McVeigh's hard drive. It's a joke, sorry.
I don't have a hard drive.
And his dad tries to change a tyre on the van or something, and a doddering old fart fucking nearly drops a truck on himself, and would have probably injured himself, and the kid is just saved. It's a bit of a stupid old fall, really. But and Superman holds the truck up, and it's kind of an amazing moment.
He's still got his knob out at this stage.
No, he's been wrapped in his super cape.
Okay.
Right. Like a loincloth.
Right.
And that always gets me.
Really?
Even thinking about it now, it makes me well up.
Blimey.
It feels like the first superhero moment on the big screen.
Okay.
Even though I think the Spidey films from the 70s must have made the big screen, but I think that was the first epic Hollywood.
Maybe in China or Japan.
I think those 70s Spidey flicks were big screen material.
Were they?
I think.
I don't know. I don't know much about them. I don't care for Marvel anyway, so whatever.
Pussy. What are you on about?
I'm quite happy to enjoy Marvel from a distance.
Transformers are on Marvel.
Alright, yeah, so not anymore, not though. So shut up, it's IDW.
The last one for me with. Sorry, have you got any more?
No, but like the only thing, like that first Superman, I just think it's terribly dated, and that the whole like 45 minutes, all the Smallville shit at school, it's boring. That's why I like the Man of Steel. I like the Man of Steel in that it tells you the origin tale in some weird Lost style flashbacks, and it works perfectly for that. It does it snapshot wise. It doesn't bore anyone. And also, we got to see Krypton action, and Russell Crowe surprisingly good in that.
He is good.
Kicking some ass.
Well, he's usually good, isn't he? Russell Crowe.
Yeah, but I'm surprised that he lowered himself to do like a comic book movie. Do you know what I mean? He's a bit serious.
They're new epics though, aren't they, I guess?
I guess so.
That's what they're saying.
Yeah. Actually, I think Man of Steel, when Kevin Costner does the same job in Man of Steel that Alfred does in Dark Knight Rises, and then he's tugging at the heartstrings every scene he's in, and when he ridiculously sacrifices himself in a tornado...
Which is fucking pointless.
Exactly. But like his son's going to allow that to happen. It's not going to happen, is it?
What I don't get is, why do these Superman films, like, if you've ever read the comics, which sound like a... Well, we're going to sound like dweebs, because we are. And
well, that's what it's about.
If you're not a dweeb, then don't listen to this podcast. But they always write Jonathan Kent out immediately. What's all that about?
Don't know.
Because he's such a good character in the comics.
You can't be in heavy metal and not have long hair, so...
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Yeah, you know, you need someone like, you know, a bit of Saxon or Iron Maiden and... Judas Priest.
There is a bit of a crime in my CD collection up there. There's a My Chemical Romance album.
Oh, MCR.
is your kid into a bit of them?
No, he's more sort of... I've not even heard of Arthur. Asking Alexandria, he was making me listen to the other day.
I don't know. I wouldn't.
And then my youngest lad, he's 12, but he's into gangster rap.
Okay. A bit like our mate Steve.
Yeah.
Heavy hot pop.
Yeah, he's listening to stuff that I listen to. He's like, he said to me the other day, "Have you heard of Ice Cube?"
Right.
Yeah, I've seen him. When did you see him? 1993 at Reading. Right.
I think I might have been at that. No, I was at 96 with Ice-T. That was it, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I saw Ice Cube. He was fantastic. Like, we got the old Reading. His backing track just was like, bitch, 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 the entire thing. And he got the guy comes out and just tells the crowd, Ice Cube's on, and just get everyone to shout, you fat bastard. And then Ice Cube comes out and then just kicks up. It was great. That's Cypress Hill as well. That's another one.
Sorry about that. Seems the planes have changed direction since we started off.
Yeah, they must do.
They do that sometimes. Normally they're kind of landing in this way, so just... get the good side, you get to see them without really hearing them much, but today
sometimes the wind changes and they start making a racket.
I've got a flight next week, so.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah, a 6 a.m. flight.
Right.
So I've got to be
right.
at the airport at 4.
Oh shit. Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of flying. I've not flown for a few years. I fucking hate it.
It doesn't matter. No, I've not got a problem with it. I know a couple of people who have, and it's. Yeah.
I'm just waiting for some kind of BA Airlines to open, you know, like just eat the burger and wake up in your destination kind of thing with no pants on.
here's a cup of coffee. And then, wake up 2 days later. Just lay on a beach.
Wake up in the desert with a sore arse.
Yeah. So arse and a kinky looking camel.
Actually, one last thing. Speaking of travel.
Kinky. Oh, I thought you said camels.
Speaking of travel-related things, I was on Netflix last night, just looking for something easy to watch, and there was a James Cameron show about the Titanic, where he was in it, but he wasn't kind of presenting it, and the presenter he chose for this serious documentary about the Titanic was Bill Paxton, aka Hudson from Aliens.
Why would you get? Oh God.
Who
was there a casting process or were they just, do you think they were like pissed at some party in Hollywood and he's like, Bill, you know that bit where you go to the pub and then you're deciding you're forming a business with some guy that's sort of sat next to you you've not met and the next day you're going to start, you know, imagine him, you know, James Cameron just sat like Paxton. how are you fixed for next week? Do you like boats?
Because I was trying to think. Because I couldn't think of any sort of particularly serious role I've ever seen him, apart from, what's it, After Dark, where he plays he's sort of a bit of a anarchic vampire in.
Yeah. What's the one he plays? Is he?
I know he's in True Lies as well, as a kind of fucking sleazy fuckwit. It never seems to play anyone of any particular intelligence, so it seemed a bit of an odd choice. Even I'm sure he is a very intelligent guy, but it just seemed a very odd casting decision. And he signed up. I think at one point he gets he's in control of this fucking little robot going actually really deep inside the Titanic, and he manages to crash it and get it like
sort of, it's about 20 million quid worth of stuff. Don't give it to Paxton. I'm all thumbs here.
Is it trapped in some seaweed in the dining room kind of thing?
Yeah, but it's just wedged there. And like, we get out of there now. I think reverse thrust, you know. The
extinction. I've seen it twice now at the cinema, and both times when you have that sequence where Optimus gets them together, it's like, we're going to go and bring the pain, and they all start transforming from robot into dinosaur. I'm starting filling up. I'm not joking. If it had gone on a beat longer, if they'd have dragged that sequence out a bit longer, I would have been moist at the eyes.
About a rattling belt was heard in cinema.
Uh oh. Pants off time for McVee.
So seeing as we're on Meat for the Beast, could you give it a rating in terms of meat-based products? Out of 10.
Out of 10, I'll give it 8 pieces of tender, rare fillet steak.
8 out of 10. Okay. Well, you've just been slagging it off, haven't you?
No, I've been trying to be diplomatic. I've been trying to be objective. I can see why people hate it. Because... it is. It can't. I can see why people say it's tedious. I can see why there's so much. Actually, yeah. No, I'm not going to go into it. There's more slagging off to do. But ultimately, I still liked it.
Yeah, yeah. That's good.
Well, it's probably. Yeah, it's of the four. It's not as good as 3 or 1.
Okay.
But it is good.
Yeah.
Because they're all good, really.
Yeah, I reckon I'll go and see it.
Go and see it. You want to see Grimlock doing some stuff? There's some excellent stuff. There's a lot to like. There's a lot to hate. There's a lot to like.
Because we were going to go and see it together on the Manchester IMAX, but I got ripped off.
If it's still on, I'll go and see it. But
I'll be up for it. I suppose it'll be on for the summer, won't it? Presumably.
Yeah. So. But I think there's a lot of shit coming out. Like, well, Cloudy. No, what's it called? How to Train Your Dragon. That's taking over the IMAX now.
Right. Right. Yeah. K Dog's favourite. Pride of his collection. Sorry, man. Okay, moving on. One thing that
came back from the first episode was a lot of people liked our insights into the Dark Knight Rises, like our kind of twist on the ending. Like,
yeah.
So I've been on the lookout for some kind of film insight, you know, an alternative take on something in film. And,
so what did you find out?
And I was rewatching Flight of the Navigator recently,
because
it's my kind of nod off film, because it was a favourite of my childhood.
Right.
So I just put it on in bed and use it, just nod off to it now and again. And I realised quite recently that the main kid in it is actually a dangerous sociopath.
Really? On what grounds?
Based on what happens at the end. Because just to sum up the film for anyone that's not seen it, basically a kid falls down this kind of hole in the woods in the 70s, wakes up in the mid 80s, and everybody thinks he's been abducted or murdered. Something like 9 years have passed.
Right.
And then he has to figure out what the hell's happened. Turns out he was abducted by a UFO and dropped, you know, like because of, I don't know, light speed kind of rules. He's ended up back in the mid 80s. Anyway, so his folks are obviously delighted to be reunited with their kid. But he's wanting to find out what the hell happened. So he goes to NASA. Load of shit goes off. He ends up being back in the spaceship. At the end of the film, everything's kind of gone wrong. His family are being hassled. He's come back to see them in the spaceship.
Right.
Realises he doesn't fit in there anymore and says to Max, the sort of main alien bloke, like, can you take me back to the 70s so I can just have a normal life? Which he does. Right. And so he gets back to the 70s. He wakes up pretty much when he was abducted, so no one even knows he's been away. And you think, oh, that's nice. He's back in his own reality, and he can get on with his life. Now, the problem I've got... Well, first, and then you kind of think, oh, maybe he dreamt that. So the filmmakers throw in, there's an alien guy he became friends with who stowed away in his bag.
Little thing that, like, bat dangly thing.
Yeah, yeah. Like a little alien twat. And
alien twat.
And he's
that's the title for the episode. Little alien twat.
And he appears in this guy's bag, and so all that happened. They're saying to you, no, it wasn't a dream, all this happened, happy ending.
Right.
Problem is, the fact that alien guy still exists meant that it did happen, but he's never going to, in his own reality, he's never going to meet that alien. That's never going to take place. So where the hell did this alien come from? Right. What it means is that when he went back in time, he not only went back in time, he also created parallel universe.
Yeah.
So in the reality he's just left, essentially his parents have just lost their kid for the second time.
Yeah.
Crushing, and they've also got the reporters of the world hounding them to death.
Feds in their ass as well.
Yeah, yeah, they're in a lot of trouble. And all they wanted to do was be with their kid. They didn't care that he was 9 years younger than he should be. They just wanted to be reunited.
Yeah.
And he's essentially left them dangling. He just shows up in a UFO and goes, I don't belong here anymore. Fucks off. They're left there crying.
What?
And they still exist.
But doesn't that depend on your beliefs in like time and what, like the butterfly effect and that kind of caper? For every event that happens, there's a load of things that could come out of it. Do you actually believe that that's a thing?
But yeah, but if the alien guy had appeared in a bag and then disappeared, I think that would imply that reality's gone. You know what I mean? But the fact he's still solid, he came from somewhere, right?
And well, he's just stowed away in his bag from the spaceship that he was on. Yeah.
Yeah, but
so that makes perfect sense.
But for him to still be there, he's had to have come from there, hasn't he? He's had to have lived that reality where they met and became friends.
Not necessarily.
No. Well, how come why would he stow away in his bag then, like some sort of alien pedo?
You've got you've got two timelines, and you've got this ship that can go wherever.
Yeah.
So the kid goes from his future one, if you want, but goes back to his other one. All the while, he's in this ship that is, say, immune to temporal business. That's why he didn't age, right?
Yeah.
So in the ship, say, time stops, if you want, for want of a better phrase.
Yeah.
So this little alien twat's still going to be hanging out there, whatever. So the fact that he gets in the bag of the kid, it makes no odds. There's no. I don't think there's any implication either way.
Well,
I think he just stows away, and just as that kid gets out there at the same age, that little alien dude is with him, just hanging out. I've got no beef with that.
Well, I think that
I'm with you for leaving the future parents in a terrible life.
Yeah,
but at the same time, he's never going to get to see that, and the parents that he's going to be caring about is actual yeah. parents, not his future parents.
That's why I think
why would you care about your future parents? It's like they're strangers. You want the parents you've got now.
That's the problem. He is going to get older and figure that out, though. And also, we've no idea how old that alien fucker is. He could just be like embryonic. He could fucking end up Chewie size. And then he's going to have to stash him somewhere.
That's a good
so
point.
He doesn't get taken away by NASA or whatever.
Yeah.
And could get him into a lot of trouble one day.
Well, if he does grow up to be like that, you just keep him in the cellar, sloth style. Like,
yeah.
No, we don't want to keep him downstairs.
Okay. And he didn't seem particularly intelligent, did he? Like, be just loitering around in his bedroom. Hello, David. Apparently, in real life, the kid got done for armed robbery recently.
Jesus.
Yeah, he was on the run. There was like a mugshot going around the web.
Really?
So yeah, he's maybe it was because of this exact issue that's haunted him.
Maybe. Maybe it was just gutted he made a shit film.
Oh, terrible.
Shite of the Navigator. There's another title. It's gold.
Yeah,
so yeah, I think I mentioned it. Big has similar dark implications. Everyone loves Big.
Yeah.
Because they love 80s Tom Hanks, but the implications of that movie are horrendous. His mum's life is in turmoil. He's disappeared. Yeah. Thinks he's been kidnapped.
Thinks he's been pedo-fiddled.
Exactly. He's still like, what, 12 or whatever. Gets busy with some chick in a toy shop. And granted, you know, it's charming. He's got his, you know, this child's imagination, and he does really well in his career.
Yeah.
But then he comes back and it's like, what? Like, that kid is going to have to grow up the next 8 years or whatever until he becomes an adult. And he's going to be like, this is shit. I'm trapped in this shit kid's body. I can't go and pull that hot chick that I nailed last week. And also, what am I going to do for a career? It's just, I think his life is ruined. He's tasted the high life, and he will never have that again. I think the implications of it are awful. I never want to see Big again as long as I live. I think it's a horrible film.
He never seals a deal, though, does he? Because
no, I think it's implied.
I think as a 12-year-old, if I suddenly found myself in a man's body with an opportunity, I would have probably gone for it.
I think you would have done, yeah.
But
yeah, it's a dark film, Big.
Because they do address the abduction site, because she kind of goes into his room and finds a man wearing his clothes. It's just kind of passed off as a comedy moment, but it's not at all, is it?
Exactly. Can you imagine that?
They don't even get in a film anymore. But like if brought you a cup of tea in the morning, there's an old man in bed wearing your outfit, going, oh, it's me.
What have you done with him?
With a morning wood, needing some attention.
Well, it ain't going to suck itself, though.
I have to cut off this fucking episode out.
In darkest day, in blackest night, the Grimsby Lantern will be talking shite.
I fucking love Tim Sale. I was going to say I want to fuck Tim Sale, but I don't. You know, I don't want to fuck Tim Sale, but I can't.
I'm sure we'd all rather you didn't.
Especially Tim Sale.
So,
that's Jeff Loeb's job.
Isn't Jeff Loeb? He's Marvel now, isn't he? I think he's head of Marvel's TV.
Really? What a grubby splitter!
I don't know, but he's in charge of. He's overseeing the Daredevil show that's coming on Netflix.
Okay,
you know, fuck it. They can have him.
We'll talk.
They can have him.
We'll talk.
As long as we keep Grant Morrison, I'm fine.
I think
the one solid linchpin in comics overall is Grant Morrison.
Yeah, he's doing good work. I just bought his run on Animal Man quite recently. That was pretty fucking sweet.
Mm-mm.
I don't know why it took me so long to. I'm just a bit of a Bolland boner. Is he called Brian Bolland or Brian Boland? I can never figure it out.
I'd go with Bolland.
Bolland, yeah. He's from not far from me. He's from
really?
Old Lincolnshire. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, is it Boston or something?
Is it Boston? Oh, I've actually got family there as well. So.
Yeah, right, blimey.
Oh, yeah. I'll tell you, I'll say
this.
Okay.
Shit. Oh, shit.
It's totally not high five worthy.
Fell for that one.
We gotta stump him, motherfucker.
I'll say this for Bolland. I prefer him as a cover artist. I can't take too much of him as an actual sequential artwork.
Yeah, I think C also
Alex Ross and
Glenn Fabry.
Alex Ross can stay the fuck off my fucking cover. Fucking watercolour gouache cocksucker.
Oh yeah, going back to
fucking 80.
Batman Black and White. Jim lent me a black and white book, and one of them is an Alex Ross one. And it's like, it looks like Deirdre's photo on Facebook. It's fucking dog shit. I can't get beyond this, mate.
God, is it Kingdom Come?
Oh,
I don't like Kingdom Come. Yeah.
Men in sagging cloth suits.
I've got a problem with this conversation.
Well, yeah. I've got problems with Alex Ross with his red jumper sitting in his fucking mum's basement.
And his collection of friends that he thinks look like the Justice League. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, his Superman does look a lot like the local grocery shop owner. Yeah.
Hercules the Grocer.
Anyway.
Sorry, I feel a bit bad there, just wailing on Alex Ross.
There's plenty of people to wail on.
Yeah.
We're going to lose more listeners on there. We've already lost them over all these our stories of crying.
People are dropping out as it's being recorded. They've not even heard it. They've got to retreat from something. I don't know what it is.
I fucking shit me, son.
Goblin brought Suspiria to Grimfest.
Oh, man. We're going to go there.
We're going to go there, Jim.
Yeah, we had this big plan. McVeigh was kind enough to get me a ticket for the start of Grimfest, which is like the Manchester Horror Festival. There was a live event where the band who scored... They scored Dawn of the Dead as well, didn't they?
They did, yeah.
Dawn of the Dead and Suspiria did a live score over both films. Both films.
They didn't do Dawn of the Dead.
Did they not?
They just played the film.
Okay, sure.
He was just watching the film.
Yeah.
But yeah, Suspiria, with, I think half of the impact of Suspiria is the sound, and having it done there in person was just quite impressive.
Yeah.
And I was also, like, obviously you couldn't make it, but you sent your brother-in-law along in your stead.
Sweet Steve.
Sweet Steve.
My ticket.
What's sweet about him?
The first time I've ever seen that fucker happy. I've never heard him sound happy about anything. Basically, Burger King in...
You don't have to go down there.
I had to go to a meeting in Sheffield with an old colleague, Ryan, who was kind enough to get me a bit of work. And on the en route, I got a Burger King. It was a bacon double cheeseburger. And I had to do the scumbag thing of eating it on the fucking train. So I ate it dead quick, which might have partly caused it. Guts didn't feel right all day. The following day, walked the dog.
You don't have to do this, man.
Shat my trousers.
Oh, no!
Shat myself on the dog walk.
Oh.
Which was...
Are you sure it's a burger?
A personal low.
It's a personal low for me, as your friend.
And it wasn't good. It wasn't just like a bit. It was trouser central. If you took a... If you took a full box of Weetabix, put it in a bucket with 2 pints of water, that was what was in my trousers. So Goblin was the following day, and I still felt queasy, and there was no fucking way I was going to shit myself in a cinema. So yeah,
I'm glad you didn't, man.
But Steve was certainly happy about it.
I think that was the first time Steve had seen Suspiria.
Really?
Yeah, he hadn't seen it before. And
do you know what? I haven't even seen it.
Have you not? Yeah. I'll lend it to you.
This is yet another case of us not knowing some obvious shit.
Collectively, though, I think we bring enough to the table that we covered all the bases.
Yeah. I do love that. I like the Crow. Crow's a weird one, because when it came out, it got nothing but love of everybody. And whenever I mention it now, it just gets a lot of grief. And I don't know what that's all about.
Do you think that's because it's been diminished by... diminished by like the sequels, which are shit. I tried watching City of Angels the other night, and it's dog shit.
Yeah, it's basically the same film, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the problem.
Yeah, I mean, I think,
and the other sequel, I've seen them all.
Yeah.
They get worse. The last one, what's it called? I think it's called Wicked Prayer. It's got Edward Furlong as the Crow.
Okay.
It's got Dennis Hopper as a fucking voodoo pimp in it. It's insane. It's got the guy who plays Angel, David Boreanaz, as one of like the four horsemen. It's shit as fuck.
Yeah.
Straight to video nonsense. And I think I think that's the annoying thing. Those are the things that are fresher in people's heads. But like, The Crow is 20 years old this year.
Fucking hell. I mean, it was the first 18 I saw at the cinema.
Nice.
I was only 16, I think. And it was another case of, with Terminator 2, My Lies got me and a couple of friends in to see it on the cinema.
Right.
And it was the second, exactly, it was like reliving that experience a couple of years later with The Crow. It was great. I really enjoyed it. And I really liked the bit, there's a bit where there's a punch up in a nightclub which ends in Brandon Lee's Crow kicking some guy on an office chair. He goes through a window inside the nightclub and nearly lands on the band, who are Nine Inch Nails, who have just been playing some fucking real nice bit of some thrashy rock tune, and they're all like, fuck, let's get the fuck out of it. So I thought that was a really nice touch. I mean, I've never been like a huge, you know, I don't know a great deal about Nine Inch Nails, but that was a decent soundtrack, as I recall.
That's a wicked album.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I think anyone worried about the new Crow film, I think it's in safe hands. James Earl Barr is, I think he's keen to have control, and he's keen for it to be pushed away from the Brandon Lee one, because Brandon Lee was his friend, and he doesn't want to ruin that legacy.
Fair play.
I think it's. Yeah. I think one thing that said, like, the, you know, there's a Bela Lugosi Dracula and there's Francis Ford Coppola's Dracula. They're the same fucking story, but told by different people. So let's go with it.
I remember my mum. I put a poster of Brandon Lee on my bedroom wall. My mum wasn't very impressed because it was just after he died.
Right.
I think she thought it had encouraged me to worship the devil and commit suicide. So a great bit of thinking on, great rational bit of thinking on my mum's part. He didn't even commit suicide, did he?
No.
It was a complete accident.
Is that some Catholic fear coming out there?
Yeah, probably. But like, what was that thing your dad about? Your dad thought aliens were coming through the telly.
Yeah, he wouldn't let us have Sky TV because he didn't like the notion of having a satellite dish on the house. As soon as 9X installed cable underground, that was all right. We'll have that.
Right. Another great bit of logic from my mum was I was about to go to my cousin's wedding in Dublin. And I wasn't going to wear these to the wedding, but I cut off some jeans because it was quite a hot summer.
And I
poured bleach on them, and it had this. It looked like a kind of some sort of denim cow or something, a denim cow pattern.
Right.
And my mum was pretty unimpressed when she saw them. She thought I'd kind of embarrass. I wasn't going to fucking shop in the wedding in them. But and my mum had all these reasons why I shouldn't wear them, and one of them was that the people at Dublin Airport would think I'm in the IRA. It's fucking the IRA uniform, apparently, is cut off bleached denim jeans. Well, it doesn't even make any sense, because even if it was, why would people at Dublin give a shit? Because the IRA is not exactly going to bomb O'Connell Street or something.
That's true.
Bomb the streets it fought for.
And I feel like we can make jokes about the Irish, as we have Irish heritage.
There are
people.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
whatever.
The old ball and chain.
All right, Wolverine. Okay, so any thoughts on Wolverine?
Well, he's pretty hot.
Right. Okay. So any favorite Wolverine film?
I get the movie. I don't know. I get them all mixed up. I don't know what they're called. I'm not a fucking film geek like you.
But what about, like, the main, for me, the main Wolverine film is X-Men 2. It's the one where he's the most badass and, you know, he's got his claws out the most, I think.
Yeah.
How about X-Men 2?
The one where he's got his top off? I don't know. That's all of them.
Yeah. This is a mistake, wasn't it?
Sorry. I'm half lost of wine.
Yeah, an idiot.
Sorry, I'll try and take it more seriously.
Okay, so anything else you want to add? That's what you want to add.
Cheers!
Okay, I'm going to wrap things up with a bit of music. Like, long-term listeners will remember at the Christmas episode, we played a track by a chap called John Gray Vogel, who's got two projects that he's known for. And the last time we played a track by Murkbox, which was called Night of the Kris Kringle Killer. Quite a cool sort of kind of horrorcore, bit of a dancey, lots of horror samples over some pretty fine beats and synth shenanigans, and really like that one. And John's also got another string to his bow in the form of Vector Sector. Now, Vector Sector are more kind of a bit more of an 80s synth vibe, in perhaps less of a specifically horror sense, a bit more of a general, you know, I can imagine them being also on, say, like a sci-fi film or a film like Krull, you know, fantasy or whatever, really. You know, a bit of a, you know, different kind of flavour to what John does, who's a man of many facets. They're one being a horrorcore troubadour, the other this kind of synth smoothio. So if you want to check out more of John's music, there's two places you can go, two main places. The first is murkbox.bandcamp.com, and for his synth stuff, more synth-based stuff, it's soundcloud.com/vector-sector. Or you can just Google Murkbox or Vector Sector, and I'm sure you'll find John, or John Gray Vogel. John's on Twitter. Okay, another quick bit of info. This is from an email I got from John. It says, the Murkbox album is going to be a little bit delayed. There'll be an extra track where a guest artist called Ghoul Show collaborates on an all-new horrorcore track with me. And I still plan to release a Vector Sector horror soundtrack for Zeta City Slasher this year. So cool, look forward to that, John. And finally, this is a track from Vector Sector, John's kind of synthy project, called From Falling to Flight. And I really like this one because I've only recently seen that film The Keep, and this one really reminded me of the band that did the sound, well, the group that did the soundtrack for that, called Tangerine Dream. Had a real kind of Keep vibe to it. I really like this track. First couple of minutes, quite kind of mellow, quite dark and somber, and then within a couple of minutes things kick in, and it's a real nice break, and well, great song in general. So check it out. This is From Falling to Flight. Thanks, John, and we'll see you guys soon.
Thank you. Thank you.